Welcome back to the Film Reel Cast, where we are going to do... And Matt, you know when you get on these apps on the Apple Store, and there's always like a light version, isn't there, of like a certain game? This is like Wall Street Light, isn't it, really? And we're going to do The Secret of My Success.
That is brilliant.
I'd watch for the first time. I think this podcast can be quite interesting to see what everyone thinks about it. I love the 80s. This is one of the few 80s films I hadn't watched. I think, was it Union as well that hadn't watched it?
I've not seen this, no.
Ah, this is going to be interesting. And obviously Paul and Stu have. So there you go, guys.
Yeah, exactly. As you say, it was 1987. It's the same year that Wall Street came out, where like, money is power, greed is good, and... if you wore a suit and you worked in the city, you were a better person than everyone else. And they kind of highlight this in this film when they keep showing suits walking down corridors and they just are so much better. They're the elite, you know. It's just so, this film is dated so much. It surprised me just how much it's dated when I watched it.
Dated, it was like being in the 80s or imagining being... old enough like that in the 80s, because I was a mere 6 year old boy when this came out. So,
wow,
I'll tell you what it was, Neil. It was a flashback to heaven.
Was it?
Was it 80s New York? Great,
that sounded so creepy the way you said that.
Yeah,
probably. Didn't it? Do we expect anything else from Paul?
Exactly. Sure. But
I've got a sense that the line of the sand has already been drawn, Paul.
I mean, maybe not. You love Michael J. Fox, Paul. Don't you? Big fan. You talk about him all the time. So tell us, educate us and the listeners of where he was in his career when this film came out in 87.
So he was mid, he was working heavily anyway. He was doing had a heavy schedule with Family Ties, which ran from 82 to 89. So he was filming that. This was just after. Was it after or before Bright Lights, Big City? It was before. It was just after the one with Joan Jett.
I've picked you up as the font of all knowledge now, Paul.
Light of Day with Joan Jett. So he just done Light of Day, and then he was doing this. And off the back of this, I think there was Bright Lights and Casualties of War. So this was a busy time for him. You know, he was doing film upon film upon film. So he was a busy lad and hot property at the time.
So when did he do Beverly Hills Cop then?
In your flipping dream. Clown. Yeah.
So the cast for this is... It's 80s. It's like if you threw a blanket over the 80s for the people who were knocking around then, who were in these kind of films. I mean, obviously Michael J. Fox was huge, absolutely huge. And you've got Vera Prescott, Margaret Whitten, she's been in so much. She's just that woman, isn't she? That when you see her, you think, I can't think what she's been in, but she's just that woman. Helen Slater, who's been in loads of films in the 80s, and her career kind of pitted out, which meant it didn't
Supergirl.
Really
She was Supergirl. 86.
I think that was her peak, wasn't it, really? But there's, in this film, I have to say, there is the greatest comb over ever. I don't know if you noticed the guy in the boardroom. I don't know if he sits next to
I did see that. I was going to message you about that. I thought we'll wait till today. Yeah,
Jesus, absolutely. It's like the top of his head is a candy floss machine. It's unbelievable.
It was a proper Perry comb over, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's not kind of committed to a proper comb over. He's kind of still confident that there's enough growing to cover it.
Yeah.
But
I was fooled initially. I had to pause and rewind it.
It's unbelievable.
Did you notice Jerry Bauman? Did you recognise Jerry Bauman?
Jerry Bauman?
Yeah.
No.
Jerry Bauman, he was art. He was one of the arseholes that worked, was one of the lick asses for Prescott. He was the miserly uncle in Home Alone.
He was.
Ah, Arch Thomas.
Put it in your purse. Put it in your purse. remember that when she picked up the shaker, the salt shaker, the pepper shaker in the aircraft. Put it in your purse.
Of all the haters, this film, the budget for this film estimated 12 million, and it went on to make over 111 million. So
wow,
I think I contributed that. Probably going to see it about 20 times at the cinema.
We knew you're rich, mate, but I didn't realise you were that rich.
Jesus Christ! But it's going to be really interesting because we haven't spoken before about our thoughts of this. I get a rough idea from the first 10 minutes of the podcast which way, as James said earlier, the way the lines are going to be drawn in the sand. But this is, as you summed it up so well, James, and I hate complimenting you because it goes against everything, but
sorry.
It is a soft Wall Street, and it's unbelievably a soft Wall Street, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was just easy to watch. Wasn't it? Nice, easy watch. Was it though?
I
could tell you were a big fan right from the outset because your messages were quite
by one message from the... why am I watching a chick flick?
That gave it away, really. I mean, I forgot what a chick flick this was, how much it, and because I hadn't seen this for such a long time. It's got to be 15-20 years since I've seen this, and I remembered bits of it. I remembered the auntie, Margaret Whitten, and because that was a massive, oh my god, you're having sex with your auntie. And then we've all obviously gone and done that since, so it's it's not like a big wow. But and I remember him being successful, and I remember Helen Slater, plays Christy Willis, but apart from that, it's a lot of bits I couldn't remember. And I, as Neil said, I forgot what a chick flick this film really is, and it, how much for me this film had dated, which damages it a lot. I don't know what you guys thought.
I didn't know what to expect. I was expecting another sort of comedy, like similar to what we'd done before, obviously not the same as The Amazing Field that we did previously, but I was expecting a comedy of some sort. But then as soon as it started and the cheesy 80s music, and I'm going to try and make it in New York and all this, and I just sat there, and after about 10 minutes I was like, this is just a massively dated chick flick. And I was like, why have we chosen to watch this? That was my initial opinion of it.
Yeah, what about yourself, Jay?
I get why you guys are saying it's dated. It is dated, but I went in there looking, knowing it was an 80s film. So I think if you expect a dated film, I actually quite enjoyed it because it's almost like looking through the window of that year, of that 1987. And for me, I kind of accepted that going in. As Neil said, almost the first 5 minutes for the cheesy music, albeit a fantastic soundtrack that they used. And it's not Michael J. Fox's best film, but I really enjoyed it. Sorry, guys.
I think you have to accept, like, watching an 80s film, and it was all about the money and power. And I think you have to accept that it's going to have a huge dated stamp on it, isn't it? When you watch it. And it's... I don't think even at the time it took itself that seriously as a light comedy, and it was Michael J. Fox playing Michael J. Fox in probably, you know, he had a typical style of acting. It wasn't until he did Casualties of War that he kind of like moved out of that playful young cheeky chappy, you know, and that's exactly what he is in this, and that's exactly what he was in Family Ties, and to an extent that's what he was in Back to the Future. I think, I think it was, it does look dated, but I can't really say that I've gone in with my eyes open to it because I've seen it so many times.
I suppose your house is decorated the same way, so to you it's quite modern still, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got lever arch files everywhere. Lever arch files and lots of trucking maps on the wall. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
couple of helicopter manuals thrown in.
Yeah, it's more helicopter manuals, isn't it? Yeah. How to do your pre-flight checks and how long it takes.
Don't stop rubbing
levels
my
and stuff. Yeah.
What was, as you say, like, it was a real window into the 80s of what was really popular. And what did it for me in this film was when they play the music, just the so many shots. It was like a tourist video of New York, of showing the buildings, of like bridges and mirrored windows and walls and shit like that. And it was really like so kind of, this is what people want in the 80s. This is style. And how things have like, thankfully progressed and moved on.
Well, I think you're right, Stuart. I mean, you say that because I think if you remember, it wasn't long, was it MTV that started in the 80s as well? And a lot of the shots, when the music hit, was almost taken straight from like an MTV music video, wasn't it? And I liked it. But yeah, I can understand from your point of view where I can see why for some people that might get a bit annoying because they're doing it a lot. I thought it was quite cool. But
it's building a buzz, isn't it? It's building a buzz in the city. Did you spot Cindy Crawford in it?
No.
Right in the outset. You know, we've got the montage of girls walking across the back
wall.
Oh,
wow. She's had a cameo.
I thought that looked like Cindy Crawford. I've never noticed it before, and I Googled it, and sure enough, Cindy Crawford is in the opening scene. It was her.
I did not. Cindy Crawford is in the opening scene.
Yeah, you recognise her with
her. Naughty eyebrows, isn't she? They're proper naughty.
Proper naughty eyebrows. No, it was the...
Aren't you?
Well, yeah, she did. You could tell it's Cindy Crawford. Yeah. But I think that in that opening scene, they are creating a buzz, and then they're creating, they're already sort of giving you an idea, well, maybe not a foreshadowing, but giving an idea of what kind of character he is. And he's a bit of a little bit of a ladies' man by he looks over and gives the girls a cheeky, you know, a cheeky smile.
I mean,
he's a cheeky chappy.
Yeah, he is, and that's what's good. I mean, for those who haven't seen this film, who, well, a lot of people obviously haven't seen this film, it's really the story is Michael J. Fox's a country bumpkin who goes to New York, and he's gone to college, he's got his qualifications in finance, and he really wants to make it. His dream is being corporate, going up that corporate ladder, wearing a suit, and just being powerful, and that's what turns him on. So he goes there to the company that then... closes due to their being bought out, and he has to kind of go to his uncle, and he takes on this persona, this illegal persona, doesn't pay his taxes, and it's fraud. Basically, at the end of the day, has sex with his auntie, and then he is successful in the end. That's really it's a real simple story to a film that is nearly 2 hours long. I was really surprised.
Long film.
Yeah, it's a long film.
Yeah, sometimes too fucking long, but...
Oh, sorry, Michelle was saying she loves the film as well. She loves the film. Yeah,
good on her.
She's really upset that Stu and Neil don't like it. She says it's a classic. She's getting very upset.
Yes.
No. You think I don't like it? I haven't said I don't like it.
No, you're not.
You know, you know he likes it because he's a massive girl.
You know,
he's a
massive girl. I thought you were going to
say
Love
Island.
Then.
For fuck's sake, he's going to like this film. Jesus.
It's like I'm recording it.
That's fine. A good point.
Recording.
Yeah, exactly. You're recording it. Yeah.
Is he still watching Love Island? Oh, it's you.
Of course he is.
I don't really watch it. I don't know their names. It's just I kind of go in and out of the room.
Yeah, but you don't.
I can tell you what they're wearing.
Yeah. I can tell what cup size they are. It doesn't matter what they're wearing.
Yeah, 100% I can. But apart from that, they were a bunch of twats. So. But, so we see from his family that they don't understand why he wants to be so successful and going to the city. It's a different world to them, isn't it? They're proper, I don't know, would you say they're hillbillies, or how would you describe them?
Oh, they're just country people, aren't they? They don't farm like folk. The big city.
You're farm folk. Why would you not like living in Kansas where the city chiefs live in there?
Very true. Very true, Paul.
That's true.
The one
issue I did have with it, looking at the film as a whole though, is at no point was it really explained, because obviously Michael J. Fox is obviously very clever. He's very clever in this film, isn't he? And he comes across as that. And it's not really explained why and how. He just is very clever. He knows his numbers and he knows how to save the company. But I'm not saying it came out of nowhere, because at the beginning, but we don't really know why and how he's come to that, if that makes any sense. For me, it wasn't really explained very well.
He's got his degree, isn't he?
Yeah, he went to college and stuff, didn't he?
He did
go to college, but so did everyone else at the, obviously, you know, at the place.
He went to special college, though.
At some point.
College. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I didn't know.
He's like Rain Man, isn't he? He just knows his shit.
Yeah. Oh, it's almost as if there's like a script for him to read. Yeah. He knows it that well. I did like it. When he had his interview,
but Helen Slater's character was very clever. I mean, she's been at Harvard and everything,
but she wore glasses, so like
she wore glasses. True. So that makes her
well. I think that was to make her look studious, wasn't it? I think, you know, suit and glasses. I think it was make her look studious.
Yeah. With her haircut, I thought she looked a bit like Princess Diana the first time she walked.
Yes, maybe not, but
she did. Yeah.
Do you know, isn't it weird what was attractive in the 80s or what's attractive now? I always love it. When I watch the 80s things and you look at it and you think, shit, back then, I thought she was so fit, so pretty. Mm. And when you look at it now, it's like...
So not.
Women with, like, facial hair and just massive eyebrows.
Glasses were the size of your head back then, weren't they? The frames were the size of your head. They were big and round.
It's so strange. It really is. It just makes me laugh. I think, God, my standards, have they improved? Obviously, they have, because I married my wife, who's lovely. So clearly they've improved.
Massively, definitely.
Thank you. Thank you, just in case she listens to this. So, because we do get one viewer or one listener. So it could be her. I really don't know.
That's just us listening to our own podcast.
Did you listen to the previous? What was the previous film we did? I can't remember now.
It was
See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you hear that podcast? Because some of you weren't on it, were they? Or were you all on it? It was Rav, wasn't it?
Sorry, what was that? Fuzzy?
I was late on it.
Yeah.
That was it. It was so memorable, I can't remember who was on it. Fuck me.
That's so much you love it, Stu. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, mate.
I know, it was wonderful. So when he goes into the city, he doesn't get that job. It all falls through. And you can see the size of the computers in front of the people is so funny. I mean, they're like NASA computers, aren't they? They're so big and so outdated. It's amazing. And thankfully, technology has moved on. I mean, these little things like this, what really dates it, isn't it?
I did have a BBC Micro, didn't I? You know that. I had a BBC Micro recently.
BBC Micro?
Yeah, I garried it up and sold it.
But I did like the bit when he's outside this shop and he's calling his mum because it's all going to tits up because he's got nothing. And then two guys go in and they rob the place and he says he's listening to Miami Vice. Because obviously that dates the film. A lot of people watching it now wouldn't know what Miami Vice is. Unless they've seen the shitty Colin Farrell, terrible version of the film.
New York is just like Kansas, intensified.
What is it?
What?
What's that noise? Is something the matter?
Oh no, Mom, that's just the TV.
It sounds so real.
It's Miami Vice.
Well, can you turn the sound down? It's too loud.
Oh, Ma, it's broken. The knob came off of my hand.
Goodness. Well, what about Uncle Howard?
Quite a comedic moment, and that's when Michael J. Fox is doing things like this. I find that's when he's like at his best, rather than when he's trying to do his kind of when he sees whatever her name is, when he sees Christy Willis for the first time. It really it fucking makes me laugh, to be honest, when he's trying to play his kind of like, wow, she's amazing, she's so mysterious and God, I'm fucking blown off my feet by her. It makes me laugh because he can't do it well. He can do clown and comedic well, but he can't do that well. His acting's shocking on that front. I don't know what you guys... It's probably terrible that I've said that about him, but I'd love to know
what you think. It's weird. It's like one of those things. I think Michael J. Fox is very good at what he does, but it's almost like when your friend, who's quite cool anyway, but then when he tries to be cool on purpose, it doesn't work out. Doesn't make any sense. And it was almost like he was trying to be too cool and it just didn't work out then. He just should be good at playing Michael J. Fox and it would have worked. If that makes any sense at all. But trying too hard, maybe? I don't know.
I mean, Neil, I bet you like this bit, Neil.
Yeah, I love this film from start to finish. I have to agree. I think the phone box bit was funny. It was quite predictable, but it was funny. I think there's too many of those sort of distance shots of her walking about and him having puppy dog eyes and probably nursing a semi with some weird shit 80s twinkly music. She's nursing a semi. Yeah. You can definitely tell she's got one under there. I'm not this type of film isn't my thing anyway. So when, like I said at the beginning, why am I watching a chick flick? I wasn't expecting it. I was expecting a comedy, and then this came on. And I was like, oh god, oh no, yeah. Please no. But I stuck it out in two halves because I couldn't watch it all in one go because I nearly vomited three times. It was so fucking cheesy. It's overload.
Was it like having a whole plate of raclette and regretting it?
It's basically like going into an ice cream van and turning the spout on and not leaving until it's coming out of your nose and ears. It's just so much. But I think you're right. He plays clown really well, and he does that, and that's why he's so good in Back to the Future and stuff like that. Absolutely classic films. And Teen Wolf, which I know James really wants to do. I think you're right. He just doesn't do that side of it very well. So I agree with you on that one, Stu.
Excellent stuff. There you go. Strike one. I'll make a note of that on the pods. We'll put that on the Film Realcast minutes again, along with everything else. But yeah, I found a lot of the scenes were really, really padded out in this. And there was so much. I mean, we'll talk about it more later. But the end scene in the house when they're creeping around, fuck me, that went on so long. I think it was nearly 5 minutes of exactly the same joke, which was a bit of a kind of a little bit funny. After 5 minutes, you just end up fast forwarding it. But
it was a scene out of Scooby Doo, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Going in one door, coming out of another, hiding. It was
ridiculous. It was just pointless. But we learn because he's not failed, but that he's been given his number of his Uncle Howard, who is kind of an uncle, loosely speaking, who owns, is the president or CEO of Primrose. And so he goes there on his knees, wanting a job, needing a job. And he's given a job in the post room. And that's when everything starts, really. But it's interesting, I found that when he went to meet his uncle, that he didn't really question anything. He didn't even know who he was, did he? He just took it on face value that you are my uncle or nephew and uncle, and I'll give you a job. And he didn't even question it. And no one does in this, do they?
No, I suppose that's, as the film goes on, that's sort of the whole point, isn't it? Of the fact that it's so badly run that no one questions anyone and everyone's just a yes man. So hence he's able to sort of get away with it for so long. But you're right. He does just go in there and say, hey, I'm your nephew. Give me a job, you know, and gives him the whole heart thing of think back to when you were a lad and you were trying to get a job and you get getting told that you didn't have this experience or blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah. I can't get it. You see the Twin Towers a lot in this film, which always find upsetting and dating as well, isn't it? When you see those.
Difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. Iconic, but you can't help but think of the terrible things, can you really?
Yeah. Again, I forgot to mention of when he goes for his job interviews, and it's so true, and you kind of speak about this in real life, especially when people are going for jobs, that he's not qualified enough, and I don't want to teach him because he'll leave and get once he gets qualified and go to another company. But as he said, well, how are you going to get qualified and experienced for a job if no one's willing to train you and give you that experience? And it's like that in real life, isn't it? That I quite enjoyed that fact that I've been in that situation where you want a job and you think I'll be really good at that, but I've got no experience. And people are like, well, fucking tough shit, go and get experience. But no one's willing to give you it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's very true of life, isn't it? I think it's. And it was very cut. I think it probably still is in that industry, but I think definitely back then it was extremely cutthroat, wasn't it? Trying to get a job. And you're always told no, you need to do this and do that, and you, there's no way of doing it. So,
yeah, I wonder whether Carlton Whitfield, because that's the like the persona or the character he takes on. Do you think that was like taken from like Jordan Belfield from Wall Street, or was would it have been happened at the same time? He wouldn't have been known then.
I don't know. Potentially.
I'm not too sure. I just wonder whether it would have been taken on by the same people. But as we say, once he gets given that job and he's drinking from the fountain and she walks up, and what do you think of the character? Is it Helen? Not Helen. I'm going to say Helen Slater, but it's not Helen Slater, Chrissy, I think,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah,
yeah, Helen Slater, who plays Chrissy Willis. What do you think of every one of her performance in this? Jesus
wow,
Christ,
so
that was
complimentary. It is very much what it needed to be. I mean, there's just lots of her walking around. I mean, the bit where he is fantasizing about her and she's just walking through the turnstile. Fuck me, you couldn't be any worse, could it, really? But she's very good at walking around with her big wide eyes and a mouth slightly open. Basically an older version of Keira Knightley.
Yeah, she's... Yeah, what do you think, Jay?
Yeah, I think she kind of a bit what Neil does. She like does the job like adequately, doesn't she? I mean, it's not like an A star performance, but it does what it needs to do, because the focus really is around Michael J. Fox's character and really what he's up to. He's the main focus of the whole thing. And I thought she did it well. I mean, didn't take away anything. I don't think she's going to win any awards, but yeah, solid.
Yeah, about you, Paul. I know you're going to fucking love it, aren't you?
No, I agree with Neil. She did what she needed to do. You know, she was a very good supporting actress. That's all I
got to
say on it.
Yeah, I found the scene, though, just fucking goes on and on and on, doesn't it? I mean, you've got that pile of vomit artwork on the wall behind them, which I don't even think in the 80s that I must have been scratching my head thinking... Whoever invented this and said it was art and people paying millions for it, fair play to them, because it's just fucking hideous. But it's interesting that she's meant to be this hard-nosed business person who doesn't really have any feelings. She's kind of like asexual, as in she's just focused. She doesn't flirt with people or anything like that. That she doesn't come across that way on the first introduction of when he meets her at the drinking fountain. She seems very kind of passive and a typical, like, dopey blonde that they kind of portray in films, don't they? That the trope they have.
Well, she was there for work, wasn't she? As far as she was concerned, she was there to do a job.
And yeah.
That plays out later on in the film.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it goes down to the mailing room, or the mail room, whatever you fucking call it, the post room, or I don't know. It's a room with letters in, end of the day, isn't it? The letter room. And that's where we meet Fred Milrose. He's a weird character, Fred Milrose, in this. The one who is assigned to help him, to kind of shadow him. And you've got the boss who's calls himself God because he's in charge of a mailroom. I mean, his aspirations in life are not particularly high, are they?
Which one? God?
The one who calls himself God, who's the boss. I think his name's Barney, who's in charge of the mailroom. He goes, what shall I call you? And he goes, you call me God. You think, yeah. You're the manager of a mailroom.
Yeah, I know. He's very much above his station, isn't he? But I found him quite funny. To be honest, he's one of the better characters in this film.
Listen to what he says, then do what he does.
Right.
Stay out of my way. Don't use a stamp machine for personal letters, and take off that stupid-looking tie. It looks like you shot your couch. You got any questions?
Yeah, what do I call you?
You call me God.
I found him quite a tropey character of someone you'd expect, so it's been done 100 times in 100 other films, you know.
So, like every other character in this film.
He was the boss, wasn't he? But he didn't like him pulling. He knew Michael J. Fox was pulling the wool over his eyes, and he couldn't work it out, and he just didn't want to be trumped.
Donald, as they call him.
Yeah, they didn't want to be Donald.
I was surprised Trump wasn't in this. This would have been the perfect film for Trump to be in, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Really powerful. And it's interesting when I walk around the office and they can't talk to the suits, that there's a different world. And I've not really, because I've always had shit jobs, that I've never worked in like the public, the private sector, where it is like a conglomerate and it's powerful people and suits, and you've got the different floors, and the further you go up, the more powerful it is. I've never worked in that environment where you don't talk to the suits. I mean, Paul Weiss, imagine you having, obviously, the Gordon Gekko of like London and Surrey. But it must be a weird environment to work in. James, you worked, obviously, in Blockbuster Video. It must have been the same in Blockbuster, surely.
Wow.
Is that why you turned to wrestling?
I've worked for Boots in their finance department and Procter & Gamble.
Other companies are
available. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Is wrestling like this? Is there a hierarchy?
Do you know what? We need to do this in one room, right? I know we're doing this in separate houses and that. We need to do this in one room.
Yeah.
James produces grapples Stuart on
James,
me.
James, though, because he will just suplex him.
He will.
I'll try. And then have a stroke.
Will start going, easy. And he'll do his grapples and like stand on the floor next to me. And I'll have to find an injury referee. Like they do.
You said there's a lot of politics in wrestling as well. All the new guys have to go around and shake all the old guys' hands. And if they don't, they see that like it's a sign of disrespect. And there's all these things you can and can't do as a new guy, which is quite interesting.
So it's like the mafia, really, isn't it?
I don't know, maybe, yeah.
It's quite powerful. So, people, are they real handshakes or fake handshakes?
No. They're real handshakes. They're not fake handshakes.
Don't rise to it.
Roll on the floor in pain when they shake their hands.
No, they don't roll on the floor in pain. Shake their hands.
If you remind our listeners, what was your wrestling name? I can't remember.
I cannot remember at all.
The Stallion.
It was a fuck off.
I love it.
Mate, it's fine.
Why was it the Stallion, James?
Pardon?
Why was it the Stallion?
Irony, I'd imagine, but there we go.
You must have had like a short list of names.
No, not really. I think it was just that, really, if I'm honest.
Was it because Black Beauty was a big thing back in that time?
Exactly. No, I think it was because I really liked Rocky at the time.
You couldn't have been the Italian Stallion, could you?
The light version.
The Southeastern Stallion.
Yeah, absolutely. The free light version.
So you have to be careful with your name ended in Stallion, because if people would have like googled you, you could have ended up on like YouPorn and things like that.
Absolutely, yeah. But, which is why I had to retire, Stu. It was getting too ridiculous.
Doing chokeholds with a different part of his body.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh dear, we could go down such a different route with that one, couldn't we? Honestly. I know. He hit that canvas so much.
You just didn't know which one hit the canvas first, did you, really?
So good. Excellent. We've got the wrestling podcast. If you want to hear 2 hours of me doing this, James, you can just listen to our podcast review of Mickey Rourke's The Wrestler. And
years ago, very good. Which shows how long you've been doing it. Oh, God.
I know. Still very good though, mate. I listened to it the other day. It's still very funny. Still very good podcast. But back to The Secret of My Success. I apologise to everyone. We have to go back to this film, but we do. We don't have to go into every single detail, but he learns that someone has been kicked out of the office and there's an empty office. So whilst he's sitting there kind of thinking, wow, wouldn't life be great if I actually did work in an office like this? You kind of think, if working in an office doesn't appeal to you, or and a great power and all that other shit that they do, you kind of wonder why he wants it so much. You know what I mean? Because I don't get hard on for jobs like this. This doesn't do it for me. So, and it's interesting that this is what does it for him and obviously he wants to be better than what comes from Kansas, doesn't he? Not that there's anything wrong with Kansas. I'm sure it's a very nice place.
Nothing wrong with people from Kansas, just to put that in there. But no, exactly. He is. He's from a small town, isn't he? And he wants to be the big shot. You know, like he said, I'll come back and see you in my private jet and stuff, doesn't he, to his mum? And, you know, and when he talks to her on the phone, he's saying that he's got this amazing office with a secretary and all this sort of nonsense that's not going on. He clearly wants to be something that most people from maybe his walk of life end up doing. It's yeah. just a massive thing for him, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And he takes
What's
on
nice the is it all comes true. Every bit of what he says comes true.
It does.
When you look at it.
Yeah.
In the end.
That's a fairy story as well as a chick flick, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I'd love to know where his kind of his alter ego, shall we say, Carlton Whitfield comes from. That's never explained, is it? When he answers phone and there's someone has this minuscule problem of trying to get some like logistical problem, getting some stock somewhere, that he kind of does he sort it out or not? I don't really think he does. He just says, this is what I do, and gets a big old wood about it. And then he comes up with Carlton Whitfield, but you never know where Carlton Whitfield comes from. That's never explained.
Hello, this is Carlton Whitfield, 4319. That's right, I'm still waiting for that secretary I requested last week. Well, I realize you're busy down there, but I'm typing my own letters and answering my own calls, and it's getting to be a pain. Empty. Well, I've been here a week, got my name on the door, got a desk full of supplies, and got a geranium on my window ledge. What I don't have is a secretary.
Whilst he's there talking to the other guy from the post room, he sees Helen Slater in the other boardroom, and he starts to get a little bit creepy obsession that he can't stop looking at her, and it's a bit weird, and you get one of those longing looks, and the 80s music plays, and it's like an advert again. It's just gets a bit sloppy, doesn't it, after a while.
She's the most incredible looking woman I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, she's a Rolls Royce, but she's also a suit.
What's she like? What do you know about her?
I know enough never to consort with the suits, pal, even when they do have legs like hers.
Come on, you don't want that.
Well, her name is Christy Wills. She's supposed to be some sort of financial wizard, you know? Harvey, all that crap.
I'm still with it. I thought it was all right. The whole thing was a bit long, but it was cheesy, but in a good way. But then again, I kind of knew, even though without watching this film, knowing it's from the 80s, like Paul was saying, I think I was a lot more, I knew what I was going to get going in, if that makes sense. So I was kind of happy with most of it, and I didn't really have much of an issue. It's weird. But
I think, yeah, I know what you mean. You kind of do know what you're not getting yourself into, but what to expect and the kind of emotions that you might be feeling when you do watch this. I mean, for me, I think it starts to drag out, but then it picks up again when he takes, unbeknown to him, his auntie back to the home address. And that's when the film starts to pick up, because I think the screen presence of Margaret Whitten, who plays his auntie Vera Prescott, is brilliant. I think she's so good on screen. She's proper 80s, the shoulder pads, the very powerful woman. Everything's exaggerated, but she's just such a, she's like a, I don't know, a real dirty old lady who's got so much money and time on her hands, fully aware her husband is having an affair, but they doesn't know who with. And she accepts that. And I like her character in this. She's probably, for me, the best character in this.
Yeah, she's the funniest part of this film, isn't she? How randy and horny she is, constantly trying to get old Carlton in her knickers.
And you get the old Ferris Bueller music.
Thank you.
Is from this.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realise it was Yellow. From this. What's it called?
It's Yellow. So Yellow was a group that was the band, and it was called Oh Yeah, I think, by Yellow. But it's not on the soundtrack. I've got the soundtrack CD in front of me, and it's not on.
Really? That. Despite the fact that it's like plays at least two or more times.
It's not on it. It's
That's not quite it. Impressive.
What I do have on it though is Risking a Romance, which was by Bananarama, and that was only played in the background when he was in a they're in a restaurant or something.
That is really strange. Is
weird.
Yeah. The Oh Yeah song's not on the soundtrack. I'm disappointed in that soundtrack.
It wasn't a bad soundtrack. It was heavily there's a lot of Yamaha DX7 in that, you can tell. David Foster was the guy who did the music.
That sounds really sexy the way you say Yamaha DX7.
Yamaha DX7, yeah.
Oh, stop it, please. No, I'm going to use that as a notification tone on my phone now. I think it's amazing. I mean, do you think that he would have had sex with his auntie if he knew that she was her auntie?
No.
No. But then they do again later. So.
But he does again later, yes. Exactly. Which is really
with you,
strange.
Would you, Stu?
Who's my auntie? Who's her? I don't even... Let me think. I'll send you a picture, chaps, on WhatsApp. No, I didn't have an auntie, so I didn't have anyone to have sex with. There was a void in my life.
Which one is, Paul, which one is his actual blood relation, though? Because I got initially a bit confused on that. It is his auntie, his blood relation, not the other guy.
No. Not Prescott. I think it was. It's her, isn't it? Because he married into her family. Yeah, it's her.
So it's the guy. So he could have slept with his auntie and it wouldn't have been like we're going to have, you know, like Back to the Future.
Go on, James.
Sleeping with your mum.
You've done that really well. You handled that very well, mate.
Did I? Okay, thanks. Yeah. So that could have happened. I mean, it could have happened, couldn't it?
Yeah.
All I'm saying is, Stu, you're single, yeah? And this woman is your auntie. Comes onto you, knowing it's the boss's wife. That's basically what happened, isn't it?
Yeah, but he didn't. But
and he did, but it, he didn't. He knew, but he didn't know initially it was the auntie.
No, he didn't know that. And you can obviously anyone in his situation, an older, attractive woman who's throwing herself onto you, and he's single, then you're going to think, wow, game on. You got no. Kind of no one to be loyal to, so why not? But as soon as he finds out it is his auntie, then I think then it starts to get a bit weird, and there's that line that's crossed then, you know?
Yes, yeah, no, yeah, I agree with you there, yeah. And it's weird that she's so casual about it. When he comes home, she's like, and basically, you know, he doesn't really care.
No, it's strange. I mean, you can marry your auntie. Can you marry your cousin or not?
You can marry
what cousin. In England? Can you marry your cousin? I think you've got to be over 18. I think, can you marry your cousin? I don't know.
Because I know there's that sense, or the conversation they take the piss out of the guy in Wolf of Wall Street, don't they? Because he married his cousin.
Well, that's not like that. No, it's not like that.
You know what I mean? Like you married your cousin or some stupid shit, no?
Yeah, my wife. Yeah, my wife is my cousin or whatever. But it's not like what you think. Whatever, you know.
Is she like a first cousin or is she?
Yeah, no, she. You know, I use the cousin thing as like an in with her. I'm not gonna let someone else fuck my cousin. You know, if anyone's gonna fuck my cousin, it's gonna be me out of respect. You know.
Jordan Belfield says to him, "Well, don't you have kind of kids that are affected by it physically because he's your cousin?" And they said, "Well, no, you can actually do that." I just wondered whether it's to do with like bloodlines and things like that. But I still think it's strange that he goes back for it when she comes around his house and she's sitting on the bed and says, "Look, I'm old and you're young." And she's obviously attracted to him. She makes it no secret of that. But and he still goes back for it. I just think that's really strange. That's something that's never really challenged in this film from anyone in particular. Or do they not know that? I can't remember now. I don't think they even discovered they've been having sex with each other, do they? Or do they?
Have they been having sex with each other, though? Yes. Did Michael J. Scott have sex with his auntie? He didn't, did he?
Yeah.
Did he?
Twice.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
At least.
I mean, she even kind of mentions it as if Wendy says, well, my uncle wouldn't be happy or people wouldn't be happy. And she says, well, if they knew what I knew about you, they'd be really happy or very proud of you.
Oh, right. Yeah, got you. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So, they're clearly like at it. But then you get Michael J. Fox going back to Michael J. Fox when he tries to run away and he's all clumsy and tripping. And it goes back to the kind of character that we know and kind of love so much. And this is when he kind of finds the office, answers the phone, and things start to kick off that he's got that ticket that his parents made him buy, like a round ticket, wasn't it, for a, in case it doesn't work out, and he really wants it. So he takes on this persona of Carlton Whitfield because he wants to be that success. And I'd love to know, I always wonder this, the same way when clothes fit people, when they try them on, when they knock a guard out or something, that no one seems to question down the line of all he did was make a phone call and said, I'm in this room, I want all the stationery, I want a secretary. But who's but paying him?
And I think it was the way he did it. The way he did it, when he calls and he comes down, and the way he presents himself, people just wouldn't question it. And they said they've got like so many thousands of employees in here as well. He's just looking, playing the part. And you've got the mailman saying, don't talk to the suit. So for me, that was kind of believable that could potentially happen in this world.
Yeah. I didn't question that. he had the authority and the confidence to say, I've already been waiting for this secretary, where is she? Then he writes his own requisitions out and takes him directly to the mailroom and says, we've got this big wig up on 44 or whatever it is, and he's waiting for this and that, and they start jumping.
Yeah, I do like it when you talk about jumping, when they're on the rooftop, when they're all jogging around. And that's when you get Howard Prescott talking about someone is buying up a lot of stock in the company. And they're all following him around like little gophers. And they don't realise that that means that they're losing money and that someone's going to take over their company. And when they're talking, and his idea is to cut back, is kind of cut back on staff, cut back on, and they just gather all the money they can as like a safeguarding net, which is everything we find out later that Michael J. Fox thinks they shouldn't be doing. But one of his little gophers says, I did have like all the figures on this, but my dog chewed it all up. And when he tells him off, he makes him run at the back of the line, doesn't he? Like a little boy. I did like that, the way they all did it. And then he says he gets them to check their pulses, doesn't he?
Yeah, so you're running at the optimum level or before, looking ridiculous, isn't it?
And you've got that guy who says, mine's a bit high, I'm running over. I think I should slow down. And mine is too. Just such a bunch of lightweights.
Yeah, they're all a bunch of yes men, aren't they? And just do exactly what the big boss says, and that's it. That's all they do.
Oh, it did make me laugh. And I should imagine it was like this, wasn't it, back in the 80s?
It's probably still like that now.
Yeah, I suppose the only thing they missed out of this is people snorting coke every 5 minutes, probably, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
What age rating was this, though? Because there's quite a lot of sex in it. Intimated sex, let's say, or rather than full on.
I think it was a 15.
Oh, really?
Hang on. Yeah, I think it was
Is it the only 15 that Michael J. Fox has been in?
Casualties of War, weren't you?
Yeah, he was in.
I think there's a PG on Amazon where we watched
it. Is it?
So, yeah.
But they might have brought that down because they often downgrade.
Yeah. The stuff. Bright Lights was 15 because that was all about coke and city life.
I've never seen Bright Lights at all. Never seen it. No.
It's not available at many places, but I've seen it a few times. It's not a bad film.
Would you recommend it, Paul?
God, would I recommend it? I think if you want to go through the catalogue of Michael J. Fox films, I'd recommend it. I think it's not one of his greatest. I think I like him, so
that's a no then.
I'll knock it on the head.
I should have said no.
Yeah, exactly. His first meeting when he goes into Christy Willis's office, because he's hiding all the time. He's walking around with his suit on, playing Carlton Whitfield. He's hiding from Hal Prescott, and Prescott's on the shop floor. And he goes into the office, and man, throughout this film, until he really breaks her armor and she kind of melts a bit, I mean, credit to him, he's really persistent with her when I'd really tell her just to completely fuck off and do one, because she's just so rude all the time. I know that's a character, but in real life, would you really pursue someone who was that rude?
No.
Maybe.
Go on, Paul. Go on.
I don't know. Yeah, I think I would have done. I think if I've got my heart set, I know. Yeah, for sure.
You're so romantic.
Yeah. I know.
You're so
sweet. Listen. I've just found something. You're gonna love this. This is last year, 2020. So it's not open yet. I doubt it, but it's going to be coming out, if not already. The world premiere of The Secret of My Success musical starring Billy Harrigan, Ty and Sydney Morton, opens February the 21st. And it's based on this film.
Oh, really? Let me know where they're showing that so I can plant some Semtex.
Get out.
Jesus Christ. Why would you make a musical of this film? You know, it's a good film. It's an 80s film. It's a classic. It's a real good.
Surely you do Back to the Future.
Yeah, they're doing that, aren't they?
They are doing that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sure, you do anything other than this.
No, other than John Wick 2, that wouldn't make anything Scottish.
I don't know how you'd make a musical out of John Wick, anyway.
Bang Bang, He Shot Me Down at the End, I guess.
That's Kill Bill.
Yes, it is, isn't it? My apologies.
Yeah, sorry.
But it just goes to show they'll make a fucking musical out of anything, and they've really run out of ideas, haven't they?
Well, when's the last original Andrew Lloyd Webber-esque musical that you can think of? I can't think of any that have been made in the last few years that have been really successful, like as in mainstream media successful. I can't think of anything.
What, like Mary Poppins is out, isn't it? That's meant to be very popular.
I've seen it. It's really good, but it's not an original musical. It's based on Mary Poppins. Like Andrew, I can't, like Starlight Express was original, you know?
Yeah.
Joseph, story wasn't original, but they made a musical out of it. Which was good. I guess so you could argue Mary Poppins as well. There's been nothing in the mainstream that's really shouted for musicals, has there? There's been a massive success.
Phantom of the Opera, that was a good one. That's a really hard part to play, slumped over your organ with half your face missing.
Yeah. You've been slumped over many organs in your time, Paul. Honestly. Don't make it out as a hard thing. Who are Mrs.? So, I mean, James, this woman, this Christy Willis, would you pursue it if someone was, obviously I know you've got the very beautiful Michelle, but if we're talking that we're single, would you pursue someone who is that rude to you?
Probably, because I want to know why she's being rude. So I don't know if I'll pursue her, but I'll find out why she's being really rude, and I'll give as good as I get back if she's being rude to you. You know what I mean? Yeah, like I wouldn't take it as long as he did.
But yeah,
I don't know if I don't think I'd be as nice as him straight away if she's doing that, you know?
No, I agree with you. I think I'd ask her, why are you being such a bitch? What's your problem?
Yeah, exactly.
And
she does kind of explain it, though, doesn't she?
She does, but it's only after about three attempts of him trying to kind of get any normal conversations, not even like any kind of interest. Like she just doesn't engage in a normal conversation. Yeah, and I think true. I just tell her to, honestly, there's plenty of brass around, there must be, so why not just go there rather than do this, because she just goes on and on. But he does kit his office out, and I do like his secretary. I think she's great. The fact that when he comes in, or he's getting changed from his post uniform into his office uniform, she just walks in, and the look on her face is absolutely priceless, and I think that's brilliant. It's one of the funniest scenes in this film for me.
It is, because he just turns around and goes, I was really warm. I'm not now.
And she's great. I'm G.
No, that was a good scene, I have to say.
And it's interesting that his success in this film is reflected by going into, like, having chats with these people, like all the suits and that, and going into, what is it, the executive lounge?
And
in the 80s, that was success. That was, you've made it, and a bit of a status, really, wasn't it? Which is interesting.
Mm. Yeah, it's a bit like RoboCop, isn't it? Which they, you know, they get the car to the toilet, the top brass get to go into and stuff like that. It's that type of reward, isn't it?
They needed a Dick Jones character in this, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah. But
I suppose that is what Davenport was supposed to be, though, wasn't it? The guy that was taking over the company, but he doesn't come into it until very, very much at the end.
Yes, that's right. And we were talking about earlier when we were saying that you would pursue her. I mean, she does kind of break a bit. And it's when they're in their boardroom. And what makes me chuckle is when they show the boardroom they meet in, because they're worried about this takeover, is there's a projector in the middle of it. And they kind of show this projector. And obviously back then, I remember when I was at school, when I first saw a projector, I thought, wow. And when you see it there, you think, Jesus Christ, projectors. If I had one of those now, could I sell it on eBay? Would it be worth a lot of money?
No.
It's just so outdated, aren't they? I remember watching a film the other day, and some kid asked what was it, and no, it was Suicide Squad, and they had a projector in there, and one of the characters in the Suicide Squad didn't know what it was because she was obviously a millennial and had no clue, and it was just quite funny. But from their meeting, you then get to see that Michael J. Fox as Carlton Whitfield has got more of a human approach to dealing with this situation. He thinks you should invest more and support these customers who are relying on this kind of logistically of Penrose, rather than cut back and the customers suffering. And because he doesn't take that cutthroat approach, everyone thinks he's just mental, don't they?
Yeah, I do, yeah. It's only the girl, Christy, that actually sort of stands up and thinks, oh, he's talking sense, if you like, even though he's disagreeing with her during the meeting. But yeah, everyone basically, like I said earlier, they're all yes men, aren't they? So the big boss has said we need to cut everything. So they're all just going, yeah, of course we will. Yeah. That's what we need to do.
Yeah, it did make me laugh when he talks about that report. And he says to that guy, I read your report. It was like one of the best reports I've ever read in my life. And he just blags it and gets out of it. But the guy is so chuffed, isn't he, with the kind words said.
Yeah.
And I like Davis in this, who's the dog's body, isn't he?
Not the one that always gets taken the piss out of. Sold off.
Yeah, he must have the shittiest job in that company. Oh, everyone shits on Davis, don't they?
Yeah, why can't you be more like her? And stuff like that. Poor bloke doesn't even... He's just sat there and he just gets it ripped out of him.
And there's the next bit which made me laugh, and I took this and I posted it on YouTube, is when he's back at his home address, and there was a lot of kind of sex noises in this. And when he... conducts that sex orchestra. Oh,
yeah. No, I thought this was
typical Michael J. Fox. He's so cool when he does this. I thought this was brilliant.
I mean, Neil, I thought the complete opposite. It was so shit. Shit. I
liked it. I thought it was funny. I've seen it a lot of times, but. It was obviously a routine, wasn't it? And he managed to, it was great. That was a good bit.
No. James. Not for me.
Yeah, I liked it. I was literally about to say exactly the same as Paul. It was obviously a routine. He's heard it all before. And yeah, it was one of the best scenes in the film. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, and like some of the jokes, they didn't milk the hell out of it, I felt. It was just enough.
Yeah, if you've not seen that, go to our YouTube channel, The Film Reelcast, and I posted that clip on there, the video, you can watch that. And I agree with Jay and Paul. I thought it was original. I've not seen anything else like that, and it was just the right amount of time, and I thought it was very funny. But that's again followed by Vera Penrose, his auntie, coming around again, and she's only after one thing, and she makes that perfectly clear when she speaks to him, and he still puts out and he gives her more. And it's, but what I do like at the same time is you're slowly beginning to learn that she is the brains behind everything.
Yeah.
And although she comes across as kind of a bit cutthroat, and she wears kind of like power clothes as people did wear back in those days, but she's got this very kind of human touch about her, and everything comes from her, and everything that Howard Prescott does seems to be, whether he knows it or not, they're her ideas, aren't they? I think.
No, I don't think that's quite the case. I think he's been given the company due to who she is, and he's fucking it up. He's got where he is, but due to her, but. He's fucking it up, and she's just reaping the rewards of it. Because that's how it comes out at the end, isn't it? When you get to the very end. Spoilers. I don't think she has anything to do with the day-to-day running of the company. She's just the one that gave him the connections to get him where he is.
She kind of explains it more at the party scene, doesn't she, near the end? When he goes to that party, and like, I made him who he is, I introduced him to everyone, kind of thing. She does explain it a bit better, I think.
there. Mm. Yeah.
It's interesting that she doesn't, I mean, obviously she knows what's going on and she's very clued up and in touch with lots of very powerful people, that she doesn't appear that concerned with the takeover, which would financially cripple her. And if Michael J. Fox didn't come along, kind of, would she have known about it? Would she have done anything about it? She doesn't seem to be concerned about this takeover, does she?
Well, I think she's probably got her own wealth. She doesn't have to worry about that. If she's running in those circles anyway, she's probably minted and got herself very secure with money that he has no idea about.
It was her dad's firm, so dad was well off, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Mm. And also, she talks about potentially a divorce, doesn't she, when she catches all of them at the party.
Mm.
And he's like, oh, no, you know, which obviously means, like, even in the 80s, that take you to the cleaners, etc., I'd imagine. That's the way I saw it.
Oh, okay, right, that makes sense, because, yeah, she, I suppose she's financially heavy anyway, so she doesn't need to worry about anything. I didn't actually think about that. I do like the bit in the lift, again, where his secretary catches him in his boxer shorts, just sort of tie around his neck, and he's doing that pose again. Because every time he needs to change, he has to lock the lift. And this time, the door's open, and he's there just in his boxers. And again, it's Michael J. Fox being stupid. And he just chucks his clothes to Gene and says, take those to the cleaners, and he does that pose again. But
yeah.
I think it's interesting that he gets Christy Willis, who's kind of a love interest. He's pursuing her. There's nothing there but to be a spy. And it's really useful that she is told by both parties, or by kind of Howard, to go close to her. And he says to her, hang around with Carlton Whitfield, because I think he's a spy and he's working for Donald Davenport, who's the guy in the end who's trying to do this hostile takeover. But you don't see anything, even though they talk about it, anything romantic. You never see Howard Prescott kiss Christy Willis, I don't think, do you?
You see when they're in an office with the blinds closed and she's trying to escape his clutches. So you know he's trying to...
Oh, well, he's sexually assaulting her, isn't he? Yeah. No, but I think it's very clear she does admit to having a relationship with him. And I think, once again, if you read between the lines, yes, we don't see it. We don't see them kiss, but yes, they blatantly had sex, etc. And she kind of even intimates that, doesn't she, during one of the conversations we get.
But I wonder why she's having a sexual... What is she getting out of it? Because she doesn't really appear to be attracted to him kind of sexually, because he's not...
Did she sleep her way to the top? Is it a case of she is clever, but because she's a woman, and it is still, even in the 80s, a very male-dominated, you know, workforce, is it like, as a woman, it's the only way, you know, I need to be like that? Maybe, I don't know. And interestingly, the auntie's almost the opposite to that, isn't she? Where she is all powerful and she's very clever and she probably didn't need to sleep away to the top.
Do you think it would have been better if she would have hinted at how difficult... I know she says it very kind of... She doesn't intimate on it a lot, but being a female, that I need to do everything I could to get to the top. Or do you think that would kind of lower her character, the likability of her character?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think if she said that might have lowered it, isn't it? It's kind of it's almost like the audience had to make their mind up, didn't it? They kind of left it there, maybe on purpose, to not maybe harm a character, because then she'd be less sympathetic, maybe, I don't know.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because you want to be on her side because you want her and Michael J. Fox to get together, but if you knew she was a person who'd sleep away to the top...
I was rooting for the auntie, Stu. I was rooting for the auntie and Michael J. Fox. I was disappointed at the end, but anyway.
That would have been an interesting wedding, wouldn't it? Of what side you sat on.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really would have been. But you do get that moment where they have that meeting. And if anybody's got this film, I'm going to go to Amazon and watch this. If you go to about 1 hour, 1 minute, and they're in the boardroom, that is when you can see, sitting next to Michael J. Fox on his right-hand side, Mr. Candy Floss haircut, and it, my God, it is just an amazing.
Oh my God!
A comb over.
Mr. Candy Floss hair.
What is the point of that?
Yeah, you just wonder what is that all about, and he's so proud of it. I mean, there was never a time. I know you say in the 80s and everything like that. But there was no time ever that this was a good haircut to have, that you could have pulled it off. I mean, it's absolutely terrible. I mean, it's just shocking.
We had a teacher in my school with one of those, and he'd catch it in the door. And when it was windy, it would you'd have to duck because it would just whip your face off.
It's just terrible, isn't it? It really, really is. But I mean, so he's in this meeting because they're talking about the takeover, and that's when, again, Howard Prescott comes in.
I'm just saying, sorry, I haven't seen them. The close up just looks so ridiculous.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
He is so proud.
That's brilliant. That needs to. I'm sorry, guys. It's that stupid face. It's like that Rick Moranis 80s face he's pulling, isn't it?
It's a bit Rick Moranis, isn't it?
Yeah, with his haircut. Sorry, Stu.
It is that face. It's just absolutely brilliant, isn't it? It really, really is. Yeah. I'm going to tweet this out now on our thread on the Film Reel cast, and then everyone can see what we're talking about when they listen to this, because it's a thing of beauty. I thought it was very weak when he was in that meeting, and his uncle comes in and he manages to make some crap excuse up. He's got a nosebleed or something like that. And he walks out. It just all seems very kind of Scooby-Doo. And again, he goes into it hides in a cupboard where more people are at it having sex. I mean, this company, people are having sex left, right and centre, aren't they?
Yeah, well, sounds like I want to work there, really. You can do and say what you want and get away with it because no one knows what anyone else is doing. And you get to just shag. Fucking brilliant.
I thought, like you mentioned it, I thought it was a bit Scooby-Doo, and I thought it wasn't that funny, and it was borderline a bit cringy, that move, and I don't know why they did it. If you're going to do it that way, I felt like just don't do that at all. You know, it didn't need to be done or done another way. It was really silly. Sorry.
The people having sex.
No, that's the 80s, isn't it? That's how you almost expect that. People having affairs, aren't they? Or work with their secretaries and stuff. No, apologies. Michael J. Fox suddenly having, what is it? The dry heat giving him a nosebleed, and it was just a bit, no.
Yeah, I thought it was ridiculous. I thought it was very Scooby-Doo, very childlike. It just didn't fit in with the film, you know? These are meant to be powerful people, and he comes out and does that, and it just... Some other excuse. Maybe headbutt the desk and get a nosebleed rather than just fake something like that.
Yeah, a bit weird, really, isn't it?
Yeah, they all snort coke anyway. And again, she goes back to his office and they sit there all night going through all the logistics of all these, why his ideas and his concept would work. And it's so... No one would do that, you know? It just... I hate things like this because... When you're not getting paid for it, and why would you work all night until midnight when you're not getting paid for something? And she overacts like no one's business when she starts talking about her sugar levels being low and my mind's wandering. It's just a award for overacting. Honestly, it goes to Helen Slater in this film. It really does. It's terrible.
I get why they're doing it, because he wants to be a big shot and so does she. So I get why they're trying to do it. They want to be the people that save the company. And it is very tropey. So I can understand why you hate it, but I get why they've done it and what their passion is for, why they're staying late to try and thrash it out. Plus, he's in love with her already, even though she's been a massive bitch. So any excuse he's going to have to sit there and talk to her. So I kind of get that tropey side of it. Yeah, but her acting is appalling.
In that bit.
I completely agree with you. It's just
she's there for a big puppy eyes and longing looks, isn't it? It gets a bit boring, but he does get what he wants. I mean, when they do go out on their date and they're on like this boat going around New York Harbor, and they do kiss for the first time, and they kind of become a couple in a certain way, but they don't agree to get together because, again, she says they need to be professional and it won't work. She's tried to have relationships. And she doesn't let on that she says she's seen a married man, But it's interesting that she doesn't say who it is, because she's obviously finished a relationship. Why doesn't she say who it is, that who she was seeing?
Because she doesn't want him to think about the fact that she's got to where she is because she's shagged the boss.
Do you think he would think that, though?
Yeah. Well, that's what he thinks when he finds out, doesn't he? So
yeah, he throws it in her face.
Yeah.
But I thought he did that out of pure rage rather than he actually believes it.
Yeah, but let's be fair. If you found out that someone was got in to a position of power and then was shagging the person three steps up, most people, 90% of people automatically think, oh, you've got that job because you've shagged that person. It's just human nature.
Mm.
Unfortunately, especially if you're a woman back then, because that's, like James said earlier, it was very male-orientated and everything else. So she's probably protecting herself. And yeah. she is falling for him and doesn't want to put him off.
And she does really blank Howard Prescott. I mean, he does still continue to pursue her. And she's stolen some files from Michael J. Fox because he's asked her to be a spy, because he obviously thinking that Carlton Whitfield is working for Davenport. And she willingly does that. And she does later kind of, as her thoughts progress, that she kind of regrets her decision. And whilst they're walking around that office, again, we keep getting presented with this Scooby-Doo chase. He does bump into his boss, the one who says, I'm God. I think it's Barney from the mail room. Yeah. And again, they have that stupid chase around the building. And it's so padded out. It's the same joke. He bumps into someone as a chat. And then he's kind of being chased by Barney. And then he goes again, a second lap. And even his mate says it, oh, this is lap number two. And they milk these jokes so much until they stop being funny. For me, anyway, they do. I don't know what you guys thought.
Do you think they've extended it? Because that's what Michael J. Fox does well. He sort of stumbles around and falls about and acts a clown. And it's just that's his personality. Maybe they're just, I agree with you, milking it. But is that why people watch Michael J. Fox? Because that's what he does.
Yeah. I mean, initially, it was funny. The first bit where he gets caught and he gets chased and you think, right, fine, he falls over, doesn't catch him, blah. But I agree, it does go on for far too long. But for me, it was one of the actual funny bits, because it was he's finally caught him. Because if you never have this scene, him saying, I'm God and all that sort of shit, has no payoff, does it?
No.
In a sense, it kind of needed to happen, but it didn't need to go on for as long as it does.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's when he goes back to his office as Carlton Whitfield. He then finds out that Howard Prescott's in there, so he has to go back to being Brantley Foster. But he's got all of the, as you said earlier, all of the maps on his wall and all of these Leverage files and everything that a very powerful person does have if you live in the 1980s. And due to that and the takeover, you get Howard, who calls a business meeting with all the representatives, all the powerful people, at his home address. Before that happens, it leads us to another scene where his auntie is still hungry for sex. They meet in the office. And for me, again, this was very slapstick, that she's chasing him. He doesn't want anything to do with it. He even says to her that, I found someone now and I'm not interested. And she jumps on top of him. And that's when Howard walks in and is too stupid to think that something may be going on. I know their auntie and that their nephew, but the position that he finds them in, you couldn't think anything else, surely, could you?
No. It's weak.
Yeah, it's really. And again, I think, as you said, Paul and Neil, that they're using the slapstick part of Michael J. Fox. But I think they're using that too much, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it weighs heavily on that, yeah.
And do you think it spoils it? Do you think these scenes are needed at all in this film?
I don't think it spoils it. Again, it's like, you know, Michael J. Fox is a big name and people want to watch him and people like him for what he does. So I think people are going in to watch the film. They want to see Michael J. Fox. They want to see Michael J. Fox being Michael J. Fox.
So,
it's true.
Sorry, are you guys saying then that this film suffers from almost too much Michael J. Fox being too Michael J. Fox? Almost.
I think it suffers from the fact that they use the same joke numerous times. It's okay. There's not an original, you know. I suppose, you know, you like the orchestra bit and stuff, and you say it's original and stuff like that. But to me, that was too much. And there's the other scenes, you know, there's too much of Auntie coming over for a quickie. And the fact that she's trying to do it in the office and stuff like that. And even him turning around and saying, don't keep pushing me or I'll belt you one and all this sort of stuff. It's like, it wasn't funny. It was over the top. It was just too much. And it, to me, I agree in the sense that, well, I don't know if Stu does feel this or he's just trying to poke a bear, but it's too much of it. It doesn't need it this many times, hence why it's almost 2 hours long when it doesn't need to be.
Yeah, I think you get, if you're a Michael J. Fox fan and you are a real serious fan, then, and you like this kind of thing for him, you'd think that this possibly was the best part of the film. But I don't, saying the film suffers, I think Michael J. Fox suffers as well, that I just feel you don't think you're getting the best out of him performance-wise, because they do rely on this for the entertainment of the film, where he's so much better than this stupid slapstick repeating the same jokes. But so I think if you're a fan, it's brilliant. If you're kind of, you enjoy his performances, I think they're ruining it doing the same jokes, doing the same slapstick jokes, because.
And again, does that just show you that, from my personal opinion, that shows the weakness of the script? If you have to keep throwing the same joke in slightly different over and over again, surely you know that your product isn't able to keep hold of people's attention.
Yeah,
or maybe I'm being really harsh. I don't know. Or maybe Paul's right that people just want to see Michael J. Fox playing a clown.
But if you,
because that's what he does.
But then that's cheap, isn't it, really? That's just like throwing a film out just because it's Michael J. Fox. That's kind of just, do you know what I mean? That cheapens it, doesn't it? So hopefully they wouldn't do that. Do you think that's down to any element of that comes down to the directing?
Like, you say they throw films out because it's a particular actor. They did lots of that, though, didn't they?
I suppose,
especially in the 80s, even now, you know. Yeah. They just throw films out that they know are shit. Not saying this is shit because that would be unfair, but they do throw out things and people just because of who they are. Arnie did loads of it, didn't he?
I was about to say Arnie, yeah.
Arnie did loads of it. So did Jean-Claude Van Damme. He released two films 1 year after the other. They were exactly the same story. They just had different titles.
Mm.
One was set in Japan and one was set in Thailand. It's just what they did back then, because people enjoyed watching the actor, I suppose, rather than what they were trying to portray.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, you could be right there.
Yeah, I think, it's a sign of the times. And I think it's difficult because you watch these films when you kind of to do them for the podcast with like a critical eye, as we always talk about. And it's hard to not feel that nostalgia towards these old 80s films that brought so much love and joy back then and the good memories, and especially when they, and what this film does well, as in shows a kind of postcard shots of the 80s, of the people's fashions, of buildings and things like that, and artwork, and that nostalgia does suck you in. But watching it as a standalone film, I think you don't look for these things, but these things are blaringly obvious of them using the same jokes, for me personally anyway. And again, you've got Howard, who pulls Brantley aside, or Michael J. Fox, or Carlton, whichever one you want to call him, and says, I want you to keep an eye on Christy. Again, it's playing into his hands, and they go to the house, and it's when they're at the house for this meeting that you've got all the top bods there. And this is really set up, which I like. But it's done in the most cheesiest way, that Vera has set up all of these top bods from businesses to come and meet Brantley. so he can sell himself, because she believes in his abilities and that his passion and his drive and his visions, and that all of these people can make his dream come true. And when he's on the, what do you call that, that he's under, that wooden, there's a name for it, isn't there? Paul, you'll know, because you've got loads of money. That's it. When he's on that gazebo.
In the bandstand.
I would say bandstand, but in the soundtrack, it's called gazebo, because it does.
Yeah. Okay, well, there you go. I've been corrected.
There you go, then. You can't argue with that, can you?
No,
you
cannot. Can't, I will sit my stamped on back down, stamped on the back of the CD. Fuck up.
And you've got a mixture of the kind of the jokes going of he needs to be Brantley to some people, he needs to be Carlton to others. And when he's under that gazebo, thank you, Paul, and he's got all of these top bods talking to him, and they're all at his beck and call, and they're all gathering round. And I love it that he's being recognised. I honestly do. I think it's great, and that's what you want in this film. But it's done so just cliche 80s, and I kind of love it in a way, you know.
It's a little montage, isn't it? It's a little movie montage, and everyone's listening to him like he's a prophet, isn't he? And yeah, he's gathering all these people. People are walking across the fields, you know, acres to come to see him.
I know, it's like Jesus, isn't it? Yeah.
What I like about it is, it's also foreshadowing, isn't it? When you look at the people he's speaking to, as well as the fact, the way some of the shots of the auntie looking at him, and she's looking at him in a completely different way, not kind of like, I want to do this guy. She's almost has like a new profound respect, as you were saying, Stuart, about she wants him, you know, she really likes his ideas, and that relationship you see changed within that montage as well, which is quite interesting. And then
it's nice, isn't it?
Get the payoff later. Yeah, it is nice. Yeah,
the way she looks at him is so nice. And for the first time, she looks at him like an auntie, that she's really proud of him, and that's great. And because she looks over, can see all of her husband and everyone else arguing and getting nowhere, and he's just excelling it. And it's interesting that they're hanging on his every word, and it goes to show how powerful and how respected that Vera is as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, she orchestrated it, didn't
she? Yeah, and it's quite funny. And because normally they'd look at Michael J. Fox, and I think what did he say? He's 27, is he, in this? It's meant to be something like 27 or 24.
24, yeah.
Yeah, there's a joke keeps saying about, oh, you don't want to be here at 25 and all that sort of stuff.
That's it, yeah. And they wouldn't give him the time of day. And it's a moment in the film that could have gone so wrong. But I think thanks to Vera, it's done so well, I think. Because of the look she gives him and the support, which she doesn't need to say anything. It's just her face. And even kind of candy floss head guy comes over. And he's interested.
Poor fucker. Yeah. Everyone loves him, don't they? Everyone loves Carlton.
And if he's interested, I'm interested. But and then you get the scene where Prescott comes over and says, I understand that Carlton was over here, or Whitfield, as he calls him, was over here. And again, he's too stupid to even suspect that it's the same guy. And again, he says, I want you to stay with Chrissy. And it plays into their hands. And it's just leads to, it's just a bit weak. And again, they all arrange to meet at nighttime. And this is the scene where you get them creeping around the house. I mean, I found this the most annoying scene in this film. I don't know what you three guys think of it.
Well, it went on for 5 minutes.
I think we all agree. Yeah, it was funny at first, I thought. But it went on for far too long.
5 minutes of them running around the house. Look, you know, it's just far too much.
Yeah. It's unbelievable, isn't it? It really, really is. 5 minutes. Paul, are you of the same opinion, or are you still diehard on this?
Oh, no, completely. It was too long. But was it that long to fit the music? I don't know.
That's a very good point, mate, actually.
Because it was, I think it was the whole track they played out.
Could it have been I don't know how long you need to play something if you do to make it on a soundtrack to a CD. Because that's a certain length.
Considering that the other one was in the background. Yeah.
This film, it almost felt like we were watching the director's cut version almost, didn't it, at some points? even though it wasn't.
Yeah.
Completely. I think we've only got 15 minutes left. But the bedroom scene of when they all realise who they are is, I don't know, it could have played out very differently. And it's not, I mean, obviously, the auntie takes it really well. And she's very open-minded. Even if they were having a threesome, I think that she would have probably been up for it. And she's sexually kind of understands it's not the first time these things have happened. And but it's the way Christy takes it. And she comes out the worst of all of it, really, because they know that Prescott's just an idiot who's clueless. But I think her character's assassinated more than everyone else. Do you?
Yeah. Well, Christy's. Yeah.
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 Yeah, definitely.
Which well, is nice. Is
Carlton really, really despises her at this point, doesn't she? Doesn't he? Because of the fact he's fallen in love with her, and you know, she was honest and said that she was seeing some married dude. But yeah, he's just so emotional and he's pissed off. But yeah, everyone's calling her a bimbo and all this sort of stuff. And strictly speaking, yes, she's been sleeping with a married man, which is wrong. But she thought that he was getting a divorce. She hasn't really done anything wrong per se. But the poor girl's absolutely slated.
I think it's because she took the plans, or and he saw her as collaborating with Prescott.
But
I know he's obviously deceived her. I mean, I think the only one who's come out of it well is Vera, because obviously it helps her divorce that she's found out that she's having an affair with Christy. So she'll come out smelling her roses. But everyone else, and I think that even though he's done it for the right reasons, that Michael J. Fox is just as bad as Christy is in this for lying. I know he's done it for his reasons to try and get ahead in the company, and he did have his chances to tell her, but he still never told her, did he?
No. So you are right. He is just as bad. In fact, he's probably worse.
But Yeah, I think you're right on that. And the resulting of what happens is that poor old Gene, the secretary, gets the sack. He gets the sack. And they never want the money back. Did he earn double wages, do you think?
No, I think he just was on mailroom, wasn't he? I don't know.
It'd be interesting, wouldn't it? And how long did he do this for before all of this went tits up, I wonder? That's not pointed out either, is it?
Or if what I missed else? That 30 minutes, wasn't it?
Very good.
It must have been about that. But they do leave, and interestingly enough, it's Christy gets the sack as well. And she blames him because she's a very high flyer and this should never have happened. But that's when they come up with the idea of the kind of the grand finale of this, kind of so to speak, that you've got Davenport in the office, in the boardroom, and you've got Prescott there as well. And they're doing their takeover. And again, all he cares about is the fact that he won't get the sack. And considering you, Davenport, who's played by the guy who was in the Munsters. It's a
Fred Quinn.
He kind of didn't kind of have much of a big part in this, really, did he? You'd think he would have done.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. He's that guy from RoboCop, but he's just not in it enough. That hostile takeover that everyone's scared of, you'd think that they would have put more of him in it, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like meetings with people, I don't know, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah. It's interesting they don't. And that's when they're talking about the takeover and you get everyone come in. You've got the guy from the potion. You've got Gene who comes in. You've got Christy. They all come in, even Vera. And that's when they realise that she's bought a certain percentage of Davenport, and with her wealth, and she owns his company anyway. So she owns everything and she kicks everyone into touch. And unbelievably, she's going to be running the company. And it's going to be Christy and Brentley who are going to run the company as well, who are going to run Penrose. And it all ends with Michael J. Fox doing this lovely speech. And it's interesting when he says, "You make me as nervous as a long cat tails in a room full of rocking chairs." It's back then, that was such a cool line to use. I could just never remember it, what animal it was and what furniture that they were in a room with. It was far too difficult. But he ends up owning the company, and just like Trading Places, the rich people all get the sack, and it would be nice to see them homeless, like in Trading Places. And it kind of ends very 80s. And it's so weird that the guy from the post room who is Fred, John Pankow, ends up going out somehow with Vera Prescott and they're dating.
Yeah.
And it's just such a weird relationship, isn't it? But why would she then go out with him?
Because she likes a younger man. She doesn't want anyone powerful, I guess. She just wants someone that's going to be a bit of fun and give her what she wants.
Yeah, fair play
to her. We all know what she wants.
With all her money, she can do what she wants. And it ends with them being successful. Michael J. Fox, as I think it was you, Jay, said previously that he got everything that he told his mummy would have. The private jet, mm-hmm. the money, the flat, the woman, the secretary, everything. And it ends in a very 80s fairy tale way of just, it's a success story and it's a chick flick.
Absolutely.
A love story.
I mean,
so,
it shows having sex with your auntie, you can get everything you want.
There you go. There's a lesson there.
Let's give mine a ring in a minute then.
I liked it. I mean, let's be honest, it was a nice ending on Wall Street, wasn't it? But yeah.
It was. I can't imagine Gordon Gekko having sex with his auntie in Wall Street, to be honest.
No, no. Having said that, wait for the end of the credits and hope. But yeah.
Post-credits scene.
Did they ever do a Wall Street 2?
Yeah. They did. Was it was about 20 years later, wasn't it?
Oh, God. It wasn't very good.
Yeah.
God, no. Why? It's like when they did a Basic Instinct 2. Why? No, don't.
Yeah, it was... It was, what was it, Wall Street Money Never Sleeps, Ed Shia LaBeouf. That was in 2010.
I did another Wolf of Wall Street in 2013 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, the Wolf of Wall Street is, for if you want to watch any film, I mean, Wall Street's very good. Obviously, that's dated now as well. But the Wolf of Wall Street is just so entertaining on so many levels. It really, really is. But so this film. Neil, I know it's going to be a 5 out of 5, but I'm going to ask you anyway. If you could score this, good bits, bad bits, and would you recommend it?
I'd recommend it if you like cheesy 80s love story type of chick flick stuff. Not really for me, but I'm not going to downgrade it just because it's not for me. It could be for other people. I would never watch it again. And I had to watch this in two halves because it made me feel so sick. But yeah, I would recommend it if you like that kind of thing. It's not for me. But if I was going to score it out of 5, I'd probably give it a 2 because it does what it wants to do and it does it fairly well. I think it repeats itself too many times and, you know, the jokes are just a bit repetitive and a bit obvious. So yeah, they're sort of the worst bits. What are the good bits? Probably Vera, to be honest, just being a horny bitch. I found her hilarious. But yeah. Other than that, you know, it's just not my kind of film. It's not something I'd ever choose to sit down and watch. So yeah, that's I'm being nice, let's put it that way.
You're being very nice, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm trying not to be so miserable all the bloody time, so. And that was hard work for me, because then you made me watch this pile of shit.
Oh, dearie me. God. James, where are you coming from on this, mate? Tell me.
I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. It was about as good as I thought it was going to be. Michael J. Fox. Nowhere near his best film. I can't really give it a 4. I can't really give it, I think a 3's too low. I'm going to have to almost go 3.5. I think you cut half an hour from the film and it's a lot better film and the pacing is so much better. You cut the jokes out and I think I probably would give it a 4, but no, 3.5.
When you cut the jokes out, you say what?
Not the joke, the length of the joke. Sorry, you know what we spoke about. I mean, let's be honest. I think you could easily make this film 90 minutes. I think it would be a lot better.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
I did enjoy this film. I mean, I watched it 3 times in this week, or 4 times because we watched it as we were talking about it. But I found it too long. I found it padded out. But there were some funny bits in there. And I think if they didn't cast Margaret Whitten as Vera Prescott, which was brilliant. Whoever done the casting on this, I think this film would have flopped or would have suffered so much more. I think she carries this film, and her chemistry with Michael J. Fox is really, really good. It works for me. The jokes are padded out a bit. And the worst bits are the padded out joke, especially the 5 minutes. And it is 5 minutes of creeping from different room with doing the same jokes, which bores the hell out of me. James, you're spot on. An hour and a half. Perfect. But I'd give this, I'd say, a 3 out of 5. I'd recommend it, but I wouldn't recommend it to anyone probably below the age of 40, to be honest, because it's so dated and it really is 80s.
Like none of us. Yes, that's why I didn't like it.
Yeah,
of course.
I think it would be lost on you. The kind of a lot of the, like, the music would be as well. I don't think you'd appreciate the 80s music, and I don't think you'd appreciate, like, the cinematography of this, of the buildings and the fashion, and when they were, the way they were showing these girls at the start of it. That was what the 80s were. Miami Vice is full of it. And this really took a chunk out of that. So I'd only recommend it to old fuckers like me, to be honest, to appreciate it. But no, I mean, from one old fucker to another one. Paul, what did you think, mate?
I'd recommend it to history teachers for a light history lesson on what the 80s looked like. Everything everyone said about the length of the film, I agree. Some of it does, we've played that already, haven't we? It goes on far too long. The best bits, I would say, the best bit for me was when he finds that empty room and he starts making a name for himself. That's where it started getting interesting for me. And I like the bit where he finds the room and the phone goes, and then that's his way in. Worst bit for me was probably that the house scene where they're dancing around they're up and down the stairs. Again, that was too long. They had to use it to get where they ended up with the four in the room, four in the bedroom. But yeah, again, too long. And I would say I probably have 4 out of 5. I've seen it loads of times since it's been out, probably. I think it's just a really good, light-hearted film, but I wouldn't recommend it to anyone, like you say, under 40. What we haven't discussed is the director. So I looked into the director, and the only films that I could see that I recognised was Footloose and Pennies from Heaven. And after this, he didn't do... Neil, be careful. After this film, he didn't direct many more.
You got Steel Magnolias as well, which is a...
Yes.
A big pile of shit, but a popular film.
But yeah, it's he didn't. He was an actor as well, wasn't he?
I must admit, I don't really know a lot about him, to be honest. I did look at his stuff, and
yeah, seems like he has a particular type of film he likes to direct.
Yeah, he died shortly after. He died in the '90s, I think. He didn't die much after the film came out.
I mean, Goodbye, Mr. Chips is meant to be with Peter O'Toole. Is meant to be a really good film, apparently, that isn't was a good it? Film. It's not my cup of tea, to be honest. I mean, the only Mr. Chips I know is from Catchphrase.
Mr. Chips, really? A little way.
Oh, I love that.
What's he saying? What's he telling me?
It's good, doing? But it's not right.
Yeah. Mr. Walker.
I think if you want to...
Yeah, himself.
This and in Back to the Future movies we did, I've referred back to Family Ties, and again, it's very 80s, but it's a real heart. It's a series. I think there was like eight or nine series, but it's a real family orientated TV show, and there's a lot of humour. It's a really good humour. It was filmed in front of a live studio audience, as was Cheers. But that's available now on Amazon. I've got the DVDs on NTSC, and it's on Amazon, and it's what, $1.89 per season, per episode. Nine, I think it's a tenner per season, but it's really good watch.
You
really
got shares good. In Amazon or something? No, advertising their prices.
Oh,
yeah.
Should do. I would say other formats are available, but and actually no, I bought mine on. I've got it on the DVDs, and I have it on Apple iTunes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Blimey. So that is. Our pod review of Secret of my success. Next week, it's a first. It's a new, and it's Rav's choice. What we're going to do is going to be very, very interesting. We are doing Space Sweepers 2021, directed by Sun Hee Jo. And this is a film, it's like a, I think it's an animated film, isn't it? But you wouldn't think it when you look at the film, because it's unbelievable. And it's set in 2092 and follows a crew of a space junk collector ship called the Victory when they discover a humanoid robot named Dorothy that's known to be a weapon of mass destruction. And this was something that Rav really wanted to do. So I got hope that Rav is on next week's podcast, that he can make it, because we are sitting through two hours, 16 minutes of Space Sweepers. So a film that none of us have seen. It's going to be four opinions that are exactly the same, to be honest. I can imagine I know what Neil was going to say. But you're trying not to be grumpy, aren't you, Neil? Bless you.
I'm trying. I'm sure it's very good.
Yeah, what's it on, Stu? It's scored 6.6 on IMDb. Sorry, Paul.
What's it on? What format?
I believe this is on Netflix, I do believe. So and it's showing on there. So, yeah, so if you haven't watched that, for next week's podcast review, if you watch Space Sweepers, we're going to be talking about that, and that'll be available halfway through next week, Thursday, Friday, probably, something like that. So thanks to everyone who's downloaded. We've had about 30,000 downloads this month so far, which is actually unbelievable for halfway through the month. So we could break another record of downloads, which is absolutely incredible. It gets bigger and bigger every month, especially for four supposed adults who talk so much bullshit as we do.
Yeah, supposed.
Adult, alleged adults, but
yeah,
I'm just hoping that James's wrestling experience and stories will keep our audience engaged.
Well, they keep me coming back every week, so
I'm exactly. Sure. I'm not even gonna piss on you, so I'm gonna find a way to shit on them. Yeah, I don't know how, but it's coming, it's coming.
What are you gonna shit on?
Your strawberries rather than piss on them.
If it makes them grow better, mate. I really don't mind.
He is a vegetarian, so he's probably got the best shit.
Yeah, I tell you what though, I do vegetarian do pass wind more than meat eaters, believe it or not.
There you go.
When do you have trouble flushing or not, or does it
no.
does it float or it goes no, straight it away one goes?
No. It depends what you're eating, I guess.
Because a lot of people say
I don't have too many floaters.
Yeah, because vegetarians. Because of their diets, that it doesn't go on the first flush. But I suppose it depends what toilet you've got, really. It's like Alan Partridge.
Doesn't go on the first flush, no.
Yeah. Breaks up a pound of Dundee cake and flushes it down the toilet. It's so funny. So good. Anyway, again, we tangent. Thanks everyone for listening. Subscribe on iTunes. We're on all Android platforms. We're on YouTube as well. Thanks to everyone who subscribed and listened to our utter nonsense. We'll be back next week with Space Sweepers, available on Netflix. And that's it, really. Take care, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for your time and join us next week. Goodbye.
Let's all say goodbye in a fun, silly way. It's how.